Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, this is Richard Patrick from Filter, and you're listening to my good friend John on Talking Metal.
Rock over London,
Zurich,
Auckland,
Dublin,
Dallas,
Milwaukee,
Los Angeles,
Sydney,
Indianapolis,
Tokyo,
Seattle,
Paris,
Budapest,
Berlin,
New York. Ladies and gentlemen, two men who are committed to rocking you wherever you might be, John Astronomy and Mark Striegel. Welcome to the Talking Metal Podcast, broadcasting around the world from TalkingMetal.com and Striegel'sMusicNews.com.
Hey, it's John Astronomy. Welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. It is Monday, September 20th, 2010, 5:37 a.m. Eastern Time in the USA. This is the, I swear to God, the fifth time I've done a host segment for this particular episode. Long story why I have to keep redoing them, but anyway, I want to tell you, we have an amazing show for you. We have part one of my very special interview with Richard Patrick from Filter. Richard is totally a cool dude. We hung out for a long time down in the East Village area of Manhattan, Lower East Side, maybe Lower East Side, and just a great interview, great all-around guy, great musician, and that is coming right up. We're going to feature part two of the interview later in the week. Filter has a brand new record out called The Trouble with Angels, and you're going to hear all about that in the interview. I want to send a congratulatory note out to the entire Striegel family on the birth of their brand new baby boy, and Mark is taking some well-deserved time off for this month, and we will be both back strong in October, which is really only about 10 days away. So we had an amazing five-year anniversary Talking Metal Live episode like a few weeks back, and if you were lucky enough to hear it, you know, listen live, you would have heard a great interview with Frankie Benali from Quiet Riot. You would have heard a great interview with Todd Youth, currently with Jesse Malin and Ace Frehley. He's played with a ton of great bands. And unfortunately, the studio had a hard drive meltdown and lost the entire show. So we've been working on trying to recover the files. Jay Bones, the great Jay Bones, who does the video for a lot of the new Talking Metal stuff, unfortunately was unable to recover that, and that was after the people at the studio tried to recover it, and it was really no one's fault, but it was kind of a drag because we had a ton of stuff that we were planning to play for you guys during the month of September. So what we're going to have to do is try to re-interview these guys and have a second five-year anniversary celebration, which maybe we'll do in early October. So anyway, guys, that is that. Since I am sitting in front of the computer and it is 5:40 a.m., I will read you the latest Blabbermouth headlines. Fozzy, Australian tour announced. These guys are going to be going to Australia. Let's see when. December 2, December 3, and December 5th. They're going to be in Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane, Australia. And the tickets go on sale this Friday, September 24th. So if you are a Fozzy fan, which is the group that features WWE wrestler superstar Chris Jericho and Stuck Mojo mastermind Rich the Duke Ward, definitely get your tickets. And I'm just going to blow through some of the headlines. Metallica's Hetfield, he says, any band out there would rather fly in a chartered jet than sit on the bus. So some people might have been coming down on the band because they fly around in jets instead of go around in tour buses. He's probably right, but I'll tell you the truth. Like, flying a lot is a little nerve-wracking for me, so I might be one of the crazy people that wouldn't mind, you know, hanging out in a tour bus. But I guess I would have to get used to a lot of flying. And I guess in some cases it's cooler to fly. I know Kiss does that, and it makes it easier because you can base yourself in a certain city, and then you can kind of fly in and out of shows. It's kind of a cool thing. Some more headlines. Megadeth Endgame Guitar Tab Book available. So if you're a Megadeth fan, go buy that Guitar Tab Book. If you're a guitarist and you like to read tablature. Let's see what else. There is a video of ex-Deep Purple keyboardist John Lord playing the song Child in Time on piano. You can go check that out. I love these headlines. Michael Anthony's bass guitars are featured in Axes to Axles exhibit. So if you're a fan of original Van Halen bassist Michael Anthony, go check that out. Let's see what else. Sleaze Bees, remember those guys? The United Sleaze Bees announces an Amsterdam headlining show. Check that out. Megadeth's Ellefson and Drover interviewed by MTV Greece. There's video available. Ted Nugent's interviewed on the Laser 103.3 audio available. And here's something really cool. Philip Anselmo, he says, if Dimebag was alive, we would have buried the hatchet a long time ago. And I bet that is true, guys. I'm really sick, as everyone in the metal community is, about all this stuff. And I just wish that none of this ever happened. And, you know, what's sad is that because it happened and because there was some bad blood between certain people, you really never know. But I would like to think that they would have buried the hatchet. It's just such a tragedy all around. So anyway, let's end the news on that note and get right back into the podcast. And I want to start out by playing a sound sample from a track from Filter's The Trouble With Angels. This one is called The Inevitable Relapse. It's great. It really has a similar vibe of the stuff that you would hear on like old Filter stuff like Short Bus. And that's really what they were going for when they were recording this record. And you'll hear that in the interview. We just had a blast. I can't believe it was close to an hour interview. And so we're going to do, you know, the first half of it today. And then we're going to come back to you later in the week with the rest of the interview. So let's get into a little sound sample of The Inevitable Relapse by Filter. Part one of my interview with Richard Patrick. And then we'll close it out with a tune, and then we'll be right back in a few days. So stay tuned to TalkingMetal.com and iTunes for part two of a very special podcast with Richard Patrick from Filter. When I wake up, I can't stay up. There's no time. Of Talking Metal. I am here with my very special guest, Richard Patrick from Filter. Richard, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, well, thanks for taking the time out. Now, you have a brand new record, The Trouble with Angels, and Bob Merlette talked to you and said, we want to capture the attitude that you had right before Filter got signed, and tell me how that felt and if that's true.
That is absolutely true. And he kind of sat me down and he said, here's the problem with not doing your own band. Here's the problem with your last record. Here's the problem. And he literally kind of read me the riot act almost. But, you know, he's so sweet, you don't realize it's happening. But he sat me down. He's like, I need crazy. I need you unhinged. I need you. And so when we were doing, like, Drug Boy, the lyrics for Drug Boy, he goes, what were you like when you were back in your 20s? What were you like when you were getting... When I said I was in Nine Inch Nails and I just didn't have any kind of future or anything in like, that band. It's Trent. It's his baby. You know, it's always going to be his thing. And I just remember, like, man, I had some guitar riffs of my own and I had some ideas. And, you know, I was hanging out with this really, really disenfranchised punk, you know, group. Like real punk, like not Green Day punk so much as Sex Pistols punk and like, you know, that kind of scene. And they were just dirt poor, and we would take hallucinogens, and we'd buy a six pack and climb a bridge and like sit underneath this drawbridge. You know, most drawbridges open up in the middle, and we rode drawbridges that went straight up, like the entire road just lifts up and it's the bridge, and they allow. So we would get on I-beams and just do that, or like go into some abandoned jail that had been, you know, like boarded up for, you know, the last 30 or 40 years, and go into the basement like on hallucinogens and read, you know, filing cabinets and open up and read people's like files. Man. Of like crazy stuff. And it was just kind of, we were so avant like guard in our lives that I just remember thinking, like, you know, the R. Bud Dwyer video, like I brought that back from the, you know, from Lollapalooza, from the Amok bookshop, and we watched it and like, you know, a couple of us like, well, damn, dude, hey man, nice shot. And it was, and I just applied like that kind of attitude. And as you get older and you get a little bit more I don't do drugs anymore. I don't really live too crazy of a life. I have a house and, you know, cars and, you know, responsibility and kids and everything. And that tends to refocus your lyrics or refocus your creativity. Well, Bob made sure, like, he's like, I want you to talk about how those drugs made you feel. What, and there's this kind of religious, title, Trouble with Angels. And like the best line on the record for me is just, you know, tonight these chemicals are God, tonight these chemicals are sunlight, golden sunlight. And it was just so true. So, you know, I made sure, because Bob actually, it was funny, Bob started zeroing in on No Reentry and Down With Me and Catch a Falling Knife. And I was like, dude, we got to like bring the short bus. And he went on vacation during Christmas break, and I sat there with an acoustic guitar like I used to in the old days and just made sure that I wrote some quintessential like short bus material. And then when I sang everything, I made sure that I didn't warm up and I didn't baby my voice, and I lost it like a day before, and then it kind of started coming back, and I just started screaming at the top of my lungs, you know, like Drug Boy and Relapse and just made sure it was like crappy, because when I was young, I used to smoke and drink, and just my voice was just permanently gravelly. And so I kind of went against, you know, the healthy routine of my later years, my adult life. And I just think we recaptured what my fans have shown up, and they've told me at concerts, like, we really miss like Tidal, we really miss Amalgama, we really miss Short Bus, let's have some of that. And I'm like, you know what, perfect idea. So when we wrote all these songs, we still had to kind of hinge ourselves in 2010. So Bob, you know, told me, he's like, you know, you need more movement in your lyrics. For instance, No Love, there's this And each one of those, you know, syllables, there's words.
Syllables, more syllables. I know that was one of the things he said. Kids today want more information rather than less. Even though, hey, man, nice shot, four words was an amazing hook. He said nowadays you got to have something a little bit longer.
Right. And then not only that, but he's like, let's add harmonies to everything. And he really kind of pulled me in to, you know, this current millennia. And then we even went as far as auto-tune on the first single, Inevitable Relapse, which really sparked a nerve in my fans. Because it's funny, now that the record's out and they hear it and they realize it's literally 16 bars of hundreds of bars of music.
It's not like T-Pain or right. Cher or something like that.
They were like, look, you know, you went away, you did Army of Anyone, you did Damning Will, you did Army of Anyone, you do this tribute record to the Soldiers of Misfortune, and now you're giving us auto-tune? So it kind of freaked everybody out, but now that the record's out, they're kind of like, oh, I get it, right. Just a little tiny little effect on it. So I'm the ultimate prankster. I think I pissed off my audience more than they want to be pissed off at this point.
If people just think back in the day, what was a talk box? It was like the 70s version of autotune. So yeah, vocoder, right.
But, you know, the ultimate prank, if I'm going to be as puritanical as like heavy metal requires, and by the way, I love heavy metal. I listened to Mudvayne and Hell Yeah and Pantera, a lot of what Vinny does. You know, for a genre that is, you know, is so nonconformist and so completely, I mean, it really does have some borders. Like, for instance, you know, like in Germany, like we're signed to Nuclear Blast, and like they're we're breaking new ground. We're doing some new stuff. And you got to kind of like understand, like, we've always been fibbing and fucking around and messing around with stuff. Our first record was a drum machine. Like, Hey Man, Nice Shot, every single song on that record was programmed drums. That's like how bold and like we were like, we don't know any drummers, we don't care, we like rock music, this is what we're doing, we're having fun, go with it. So after I did that, I figured no holds barred. So it's kind of interesting that like everyone has had such a massive puritanical, like, you know, you can't go there. Maintain your borders. That's only for hip-hop. That's only for R&B. And already the new kids, there's a bunch of attack. There's a whole bunch of new bands that are like, that's their shtick is the auto-tune. So I actually think it's kind of interesting to be kind of, me and Bob just thought it was cool. I mean, you know, Bob and I just kind of laughed and thought it was, hey, it's funny, put that on. You know, and it's interesting that it became such an amazing, you know, like controversial move.
Right. Well, hey, it's good. People are all talking about the Inevitable Relapse, which is a great tune. I want to talk a little bit about some of the different songs. And what I'm interested in is the recording process. Now, you mentioned that you wrote a lot of stuff on acoustic before. Did you have all of the song ideas before you got into the studio, or did this happen while you were there?
I've always actually had... I felt I needed a full studio and an engineer at my beckoning call for, like, everything that I've ever done, like, all the way. Like, after Short Bus, I was like, well, if you have equipment and you're two dudes, you can make an interesting rock record. So I've always had this, like, albatross of electronics that are always around, and I always have to work with engineers because I like working with people and I like doing stuff like that. But I've actually now started to go the other way, which is just play it on acoustic, learn a chord progression that you like, and, you know, sing a melody over the top of it, and then go into a studio and go, this is what I got, let's do it, you know, work on it like a project where it starts off with a click track and like a guitar performance, and then you add programming, and then, you know, then you go to a studio, put a real studio, record drums, come back, re-record all the guitars, then sing it for real. So it's kind of a time consuming process, but the fact that I released a record, you know, a mere 18 or, you know, 2 years ago to, and put a record out this quickly, that's, that I, you know, I got to say this, that that has this amount of quality, I think is like, I think we finally got it down. So,
you know, a lot of people in your position wouldn't, and it's sad to say, like to have other collaborators. And I think it's really cool that you could go in if you wanted to and say, look, I'm going to make a Filter record. It's going to be exactly the way I want it. But you're bouncing stuff off of Bob, and then Mitch Marlowe, I know, wrote some stuff in Drug Boy and some of the other tunes.
I still consider Mitch Marlowe a member of the band. It's just that Mitch is starting a family, and he's also got a bunch of like stuff going on at his studio and stuff. And we were like, you know what? One day, maybe we'll all go on tour, and you can be. I think Filter has always been a two guitar band. It's just that, you know, Rob Patterson's new, and we wrote stuff together too. Shot from the Sun on the deluxe CD is kind of co-written by Rob and Phil. The one thing I'm going to have to say about this band is, as much as I've tried to promote it as like a band, I think I kind of like went overboard on title of record and stuff like that. It's always been, I'm the only original member. And I've never.
One consistent member.
I've always tried to distance myself from Nine Inch Nails or, you know, or like Neil Diamond or Prince. Or I've never wanted to be the guy in charge. I hate the responsibility. I like the camaraderie of a band. I like bouncing ideas off. The one thing that I've realized is that if it is going to be a scenario where a lot of different people can come in and they're interchangeable, let's work on keeping them around. You know, Brian Lee Skang did programming on Fades Like a Photograph. You know, we haven't worked in 15 years. At the same time, Ray DeLeo did a lot of stuff on this record. A new guy, Bruce Summers from the Kidney Thieves, is on this record. Bob did some programming. Mitch Marlowe wrote a bunch of the songs with Bob. I wrote some songs with Mitch and Bob. I wrote songs with Bob. Actually, Bob's all over the record. The reality is, you know, there are two truths. There are two truths. I'm the main guy. It's always been my baby. Whenever there's a record contract, I'm the only one who puts his name on the dotted line. It's always been me. Having said that, I collaborate with a bunch of people, and you know, I always try and find the good in working with other people. So there's a large amount of people that I work with. So there's almost like 10, 15 bandmates. I mean, Josh Fries. I mean, there's so many other people that like I work with, and because I try and keep it the singularity more. I'm trying to keep it a little bit more control on where it goes. I think that that's why this record sounds like, oh, great, Filter's back. It's doing its normal thing, and that's kind of, as long as I kind of make sure that like I keep my stick to my guns and really kind of. Go with my instincts. I think that's the overwhelming Filter vibe.
You mentioned that you try to get your head in the same place it was when you weren't sober, and you showed me your tattoo. You've been sober now for how many years now?
7 years, going on eight in September.
Congratulations. A lot of musicians that I've been hanging around with have been sober, and things have changed from when it was cool to go out and, you know, get a little crazy.
Well, the drugs are still there. They're out there. I mean, there's a lot of young bands that keep it alive, you know, keep the drug ritual alive. But in all honesty, in our... You know, when it gets to become an addiction, there's three places you're going to end up. You're going to end up dead. You're going to end up in an institution like a rehab or, you know, a jail. Or you're going to end up sober, you know. And, you know, it's funny, Trent, me, we used to drink like fish when we were young. I mean, we wouldn't go on stage unless we were a little buzzed, you know. You know, he got sober, I got sober. We were on our way to the graveyard. I mean, I literally, it was like another couple of weeks of the way I was drinking. It was like I was either going to kill myself or I was going to, you know, something was going to explode in my brain. I just could not keep it up. The hangovers were just ridiculous. Shaking, uncontrollable shaking. It was about as bad as it can get. And, you know, I mean, look at the history. Look at, you know, Kurt Cobain. I mean, you know, that was drug related. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know if people want to know that, but sure, he was a big dope fiend. And, you know, he couldn't handle the pressure of all of a sudden he went from kind of nerdy guy in a Seattle band to this massive star. He's only 25. He's hooked on some serious drugs, and he just, like, couldn't take it anymore, you know? And unfortunately, that's where we go. That's where drug addicts and alcoholics go. So it's been an amazing survival story. I mean, I got to say that I got an email the other day that said, I've been waiting to kick painkillers, and I knew that I was going to need strength, and I needed a new soundtrack, so I waited until the release date of the Filter record, because Richard Patrick did it, he's my inspiration, I want to hear his music to keep me inspired, which totally blows me away. That is, I've never been more humbled in my life getting that kind of mail. That's why I'm publicly recovering alcoholic. That's why I've decided to be public, because of that reason right there. The other thing that I've noticed is that, like, when I get suicide letters sometimes, and I give them my number and I say, call me. And then I hope I don't get a bunch of pranks now, but I call them and I just talk, and we talk. There's one girl I talked to her for all the way through Christmas break. And she couldn't take her drinking, and she finally, and you know, some of these people are really young, and she finally, I got her to call one of my expert people that I have lined up. Actually, his name is Dr. Howard. He's the owner of Promises, or not Promises, Wonderland in L.A. And he's actually the guy that got me sober, and is it okay?
Yeah.
He got me sober, and so I turned her over to him, and boom, she's been sober for like 3 years now. And it's insane, because she was literally like, I'm going to jump. And that's unfortunately that's a common thing. There's another kid that, like, I've got a handful of these stories, but there's another kid that, just to give you an idea on some of the people I talked to, there's a kid that had 3 DUIs before his 17th birthday. And he said, I know you got sober. How did you do it? What did you do? And I said, I went to this place. I went to meetings. I did what they told me, and I accepted the fact that I'm an alcoholic. And I gave him my number, and I said, you can call me anytime you want. And he would text. He's this big, like, texter. And it turns out that this kid has 190 IQ.
Wow.
And he scholastically is so gifted that the state that he lives in funded his entire scholastic career, you know, full scholastic scholarship of the of the school of his choice, and he is now getting like the highest of the highest grades that you can get, and he's like in his class he's like in the top 5.
Wow.
And it's and literally, see, that's the amazing thing about mental illness or alcohol or drug dependency. It's awesome people. Most of the time, some of the time, it's like incredible people that have born with the predisposition of, I like beer beyond you. I like beer. I'm going to sit by myself. This kid used to sit by himself and drink a vat of vodka before he was even 15, 16. He snuck it in and somehow did this. And he's big, so he hit it somehow. That's why I'm so publicly, you know, recovering alcoholic.
Well, congratulations not only for your recovery, but for the assistance that you gave to a lot of people. I mean, you saved people's lives, and, you know, not everybody would do that.
The program, and I think being honest with it and accepting it, that, you know, because there's so many years where you don't accept it. You're like, I'm not. I literally would thumb my nose at sobriety. I would thumb it and just be like, what a bunch of quitters and pussies. You know, like, I literally was such a bad drunk. So bad. But It was the program that gave me so much knowledge on how to, and it's the support group of that program, and I guess the public kind of fight that has helped me lead people to their recovery. Because at the end of the day, it's literally, we have to save our own lives. There's no one that's going to do it for us.
You also, in saying that, I think answered the original question that I had. You can reflect back on that, but it's not going to bring you back to wanting to do something like that.
You know, when I walked in, I was done. I mean, I walked in and I took a look around and I said, I just kind of told myself, I was like, this is it. Take a good look around because this is the last fucking time you're going to do this. And I now go to rehabs as like a speaker. Or I go to help people that I know that are, you know, that's the thing. Some of your friends end up in there and you got to go. And so, but I was done. I had done the research. I discovered beyond a shadow of a doubt that if I drink a sip of booze, I am one sip away from my disease. And I approach it like it's taking arsenic or anything like that. If I taste it in a dessert or something, I'll be like, fuck that. I can't, because desserts can set us off because the alcohol is not cooked.
Right.
So I'm like literally like I was so anal. And, you know, now I've just grown into that. And there's a lot of shame in the beginning. Like, you're like, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I can't have any of that. You know, and you're, but now it's like, I don't drink. You know, and it's like, it's accepted because you don't realize how, like, it's so bizarre when you're first just in sobriety, you can't believe that other people don't drink out of, like, I just don't like the way it makes me feel. Like, you can't, like, everybody drinks. Everybody drinks like this. Everybody goes to fraternities or whatever and the college bar and gets wasted. Like, not really. There's a huge amount of people that are just like, yeah, wine makes me dizzy. I don't like it. It makes me feel, you know, so it's bizarre.